when I think about what an offensive attacker would start with, they're going to start with your active directory. It's a map to the whole place. It's the keys to the kingdom. But the problem is when you do have things that are so central, asking who owns it, that's not a straightforward question.
Hi, everyone. Before we start with today's interview, we're holding our annual Hybrid Identity Protection, HIP, conference in Charleston, South Carolina at Charleston Place, October 7th through the 9th. The HIP conference and HIP community were created to educate, connect, and support the professionals working daily to protect hybrid identity environments from modern cyber threats. We have distinguished speakers from both the private and public sector, such as former director of CISA, Jen Easterly, and former national cyber director, Chris Inglis. Whatever your role or industry, if your organization runs on-prem Active Directory and in the cloud Entra ID or Okta, the HIP conference is for you. Go to hipconf.com, that's hipconf.com, to sign up. Early bird pricing, good until August 31st. Use the code WHATISHIP for a 10% discount.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the HIP podcast. I'm your host, Sean Doobie. Anyone that's not been living under a rock or, more kindly, diligently avoiding the news knows that the U.S. federal government is going through the biggest shakeup of its existence. I know from my own conversations that even at the highest levels, everyone is scrambling to respond to orders and to figure out how to keep the government running. My guest today to talk about this is Edward Amoroso. Ed is CEO of TAG Infosphere, a global cybersecurity advisory, training, consulting, and media services company. It's safe to say that Ed was deeply involved in information security before many of our listeners were born. To keep his introduction to a manageable length, let's just say that Ed was the CISO of AT&T for 20 years and only the second person ever to hold that role. Bank board advisor, senior advisor for the Applied Physics Lab at Johns Hopkins, professor at NYU, and member of the NSA Advisory Board. And I'm still leaving a lot off. Welcome, Ed.
Nice to see you, Sean.
So, as I said, everybody has been seeing what's been going on in the government. And from our viewpoint, our professional viewpoint, we're concerned about cybersecurity and what's happening with cybersecurity in the government. Can you maybe give us a little bit of a summary of what has gone on in the last few weeks around the federal cybersecurity infrastructure and the general association and going around that?
Well, there's a lot of change, Sean. And when you do the security job, whether you're in a small company or a big giant organization, the one word you don't like is change. It's when things are moving for the better, worse, or whatever, it introduces risk. Because, you know, the challenge of trying to secure infrastructure is more than just sort of overlaying tools onto something. It's also keeping the infrastructure itself stable. You know, like I spent a lifetime in telecommunications. When we first built electronic switching, the objective, this is in the 1970s, called ESS, electronic switching systems, for some of the older people listening. The objective was for these things to work for four decades, 40 years, with maybe one failure. And that happened. There was one failure in 1990. One of the big switches caused a problem in January 15th, 1990. See, I remember the date.
Yeah.
But over four decades, it didn't break. The reason none of that broke is because we didn't change it. So if you put something in place and let it be, you might say, wow, that's going to be pretty stale. You know, you're not upgrading, you're not adding new features, adding new capabilities. All true. But in terms of what I do for a living, securing things, making sure that an adversary can't get in and take remote control or, you know, steal data or do some bad thing. When we see change, that's when we see risk. Now, again, we don't live under a rock, as you said in your preamble. I'm also not living under a rock. So we see, it's not just government, it's everybody. And you know, all the different large and small businesses here in the United States and around the globe are all undergoing a lot of change. It might be because of AI or tech, people or geopolitics or whatever, but it's a time of great change. And I've been programmed, you know, over my career to have my sensors go straight up when I see this much change. It tells me that an adversary is probably taking action right now. And we can talk some more about that, but that would be my first observation that over the last days, weeks, months, and it's likely to continue, change has been probably the most accurate moniker for what's going on in our infrastructure.
You know, it's interesting that you, when you say essentially change introduces risk and that how you avoided risk is by not making any changes.
Right.
And from a, well, let's call it a microscopic or at a local level, one's applications. And this is part of the whole stress that we go through in the industry is, look, this just works. It's worked for years. I don't want to change anything because it works just fine. But what has changed is everything around it. The larger environment has changed, and that's where the risk comes in to the systems that haven't changed, which is so different than physical switches, and where we have many, many more moving parts than we ever had.
You know, a vivid illustration. I've had some interaction with companies that do all sorts of things in my work at TAG and also at NYU. But one that stands in my mind is that there are these companies that print out lottery tickets. And think about that. You wouldn't want to get that wrong, right? Print out a few too many $1 million winners, and that could be a very big problem. And as right. I understand it, that is an industry that still uses 1980s technology to generate those tickets that you buy. And they,
right.
You know,
right.
The scratch things. And so that the idea being, look, this works. We haven't had a problem. There's no need to upgrade. Upgrading sounds like risk, so we better not do that. Now, again, I'm a technologist, so are you. That's not going to work. And 99 out of 100 times, that's going to be overruled by technologists and CIOs and customers who are just going to freak out and say, what are you kidding me? But you can see how the principle holds. It makes it very vivid. Where you say, look, I'm not saying don't innovate. That's not the point at all. In fact, innovation is a good way to do security better. All I'm saying is that what we're seeing, like in FedGov, like civilian agencies, for example, in the United States, is this spectacular change that's happening. Therefore, we can conclude that the risk's going up. Things are moving around. People are being moved in and out. Roles are being changed. Responsibilities are being adjusted. Positions are being eliminated. Systems are probably either getting more or less attention. These all are things that for an old CISO like myself, make me want to swallow a couple of Tums. You know, that's the kind of thing that really does signal that there's probably some shenanigans going on initiated by an adversary.
Exactly. Because as you say, with change involved, the people take their eye off the ball. If they're concerned about the fact that they've gotten a termination notice, they may take their eye off the ball. And that's what adversaries are looking for.
Make a mistake, right? I mean, the one indictment of human beings is that we are pretty fallible. And, you know, so making a mistake is already a very high likelihood in any sort of complex process, right? If you and I are dropped into a really difficult workflow and we're doing part of it, think about like processing tickets at the Social Security Administration, dealing with senior citizens. It's complicated. It's all these fraud issues that people are claiming. It's a complex thing. So you introduce a lot of change into that. You say, hey, we're not going to let you use the phone anymore. We're just going to be using the computer. Which for you and I, we're a couple of nerds. We're fine with that. But my mom, it's an issue. My mother
right.
would have great difficulty. So that's change. And that means there's going to have to be some workaround. Like what's my mother going to, she's old. She's almost, my parents are in their 90s. So how do they deal with Social Security? So that's where change introduces seams, introduces gaps, and an adversary steps in. And that's where the risk becomes so real. And I'm, you know, the people listening to this podcast are probably mostly cyber and IT and network people like us. And my suspicion is that I'm not saying anything they would disagree with. We all have these sort of stories from our career where something went right and something went wrong. Usually something went right because you introduced stability to a thing, a system, a network. You cleaned it up, you set it up, and it was stable. Usually when things go wrong is because things were shifting, changing, and it was a little bit too much to keep up with. You lost track of your inventory. You didn't realize that you had this thing that you had. You had no idea that you'd merged with that subsidiary company. They're who? They did what? They stole what? It's like that. It's happening, changing, going so quickly, you can't keep up. And that's what we see happening, not just in the U.S., but in a lot of places. But obviously, it's very prominent in civilian agencies in the United States right now. Lots and lots of change. There's people who applaud that and people who don't. But I think one thing we all agree on is if you're going to change it, you introduce risk, period. That is not really even a debatable point. It's just how do you react to it? And that's where maybe we can spend some time on our recommendation. But recognizing that the risk is there, I hope, is not controversial.
What factors led us, do you think, to this situation?
A complexity. Like, we do have a lot of complexity in just about everything we do. And that's not that government got it right or wrong, because business is just as complicated. When was the last time you called an insurance company to try to get something done, right? If you have elder parents and you're calling insurance companies, it's hard to keep your hair, right? You just want to pull up. So it's not just government. It's that when things are complicated, then jockeying around that and finding the touch points where you're entering data or getting information back or making changes to things, the kind of things human beings do around computers and systems and software, if that's very complex, then it's not going to be secure. There's this famous thing I do with my grad students where I show them this piece of PVC pipe. It's like a little fucking thing. It's got a thing you can turn, like a valve. It's got some little screw holes. And I can show it to them and say, hey, do you have any idea what this thing is for? And most of them go, I have no idea. But if I say, do you know how it works? They look at it and say, I can see exactly how it works. You turn this thing, the flap goes like this. There's a few screws. You wouldn't be able to hack it because I know exactly how it works. It's simple. I may not know what it does, but I know how it works. For most infrastructure, it's the opposite. Like if you and I walked into a nuclear power plant, somebody said, hey, Sean, Ed, do you know what this place does? We'd go, yeah, I know exactly what it does. It makes nuclear power. And then they say, do either of you guys know how it works? We'd look at each other and say, I haven't the foggiest idea how this place works. That's the problem. That when you understand what something does, but you don't know how it works, then you've got a problem. Now, when you pull people out of the bowels of these systems, the administrators, the whatever, you do introduce risk because there's institutional learning that keeps it all together. And again, there's some people listening right now who are applauding that. Whatever. We are really talking politics here. We're talking about computing and networking and infrastructure. Just saying, these complex systems, a lot of times it's, you know, Bill sitting over there is holding it all together. Now, is that a good design? No. Is that unique to government? Absolutely not unique to government. It's unique to so many different aspects of our whole society. So that's why one worries that when you make a lot of changes, if Bill sitting over there was holding it together, he's not there anymore, then that becomes an exploitable vulnerability that an adversary can step into. There's nobody minding the door anymore. You walk right in. So that's, as a cybersecurity professional, that's the thing that's kind of giving me pause and making me a little nervous.
Yeah, I know. I'm thinking about that example. And as you say, it applies everywhere. And it also applies to, shamelessly say, Active Directory, where for years and years and years it's worked. Nobody else knows how it works, but it's the gray-haired guy with the beard with his arms crossed in the corner of the conference room that's run it for 30 years. And so he retires or something happens to him. And then nobody knows how to touch the thing.
It's even worse than that. Like, let's talk Active Directory. And I know Sempros does such a good job securing AD. Active Directory starts with the problem that it is orphaned organizationally, meaning does IT own it? Sort of. Does security own it? Do developers need access to it? They do. How about the application? Like, everybody's got their hand in it because it's so central. That's why when I think about what an offensive attacker would start with, they're going to start with your Active Directory. It's a map to the whole place. It's the keys to the kingdom. But the problem is when you do have things that are so central, asking who owns it is that's not a straightforward question. You know, when I was working in telecom, I sort of owned it. You know what I mean? Like pieces of the identity and access management puzzle that I had responsibility for. But say the day-to-day upkeep of the servers and the infrastructure, probably an IT operations responsibility. So there's like this, who owns it? Well, you're going to have to be more specific. What do you mean? So it starts with that problem. It's already complicated. It's central. And it's not even all that clear in most organizations who owns it. So we in our work at TAG, we usually tell teams, it kind of doesn't matter who owns it, but you have to have clarity. It has to be somebody who feels like they are driving a roadmap. They understand the architecture. They like that PVC example I gave you a minute ago. You want some people who say Active Directory? Absolutely. Where's a whiteboard? I'll show you exactly how our thing works, how it's set up, how it's configured, what the strengths are, what weaknesses. When you've got that, that's good. That's step one. Then you find a great partner, Sempros, you know, being an excellent one, and you build that into that existing stable understanding of something that's, you know, foundationally solid. If you have, we're not sure who owns it, we're not sure how it's configured, it's kind of sloppy. Wow, you introduce change to that, you're going to be in a lot of hot water. And unfortunately, and you would know more about this than me, but I would say that the majority of organizations in both public and private sector, and both in and outside the U.S., the majority probably have less understanding of their Active Directory infrastructure than, I'll be kind and say, than they should. But I think in many cases, it's very weak, almost alarmingly so. So if I was going to tell people, and they ask me all the time, what's the one thing I should do? Say, clean up your identity and Active Directory. Like, if you've got nothing else you can do, I mean, I hope there's more you can do than that. But if you're going to start somewhere, that's where I start. And, you know, run over to like Black Hat, one of these big hacker conferences, and ask a bunch of hackers where they start. And they'll, right, if they're being honest, they'll say that's where they start too. But after you, they're going to go after your identity infrastructure. And I don't blame them. It's weak.
Right.
Means to the kingdom. You know, it all sort of makes a lot of sense. So you can see how things, you know, with change, with a lot of nervousness in, say, these agencies, with the lack of clarity that typically exists around AD, with the complexity of those systems, with, you know, that they are, I think, probably the eagerness of an adversary to take advantage of this situation. Add all that up, and it points a big, big, giant bullseye in your Active Directory. So that would be for somebody listening right now who's, say, working in IT or working in security, and you're sort of looking for that one nugget. My nugget would be, amidst times of great change to infrastructure, first place you look, just like the first thing you do when you hop out of a cab, you grab your wallet. First thing you do when you're looking at your infrastructure when things are changing is you look at your identity infrastructure. Make sure that there aren't any obvious weaknesses, and that's the first thing you should fix.
So when change induces risk, the first thing you should do is look to the riskiest, what is already the riskiest part of your infrastructure, and focus on that. So
that's the recipe. That's how.
So more broadly then, and I like that because that's pretty, it's a pretty simple message. So more broadly then, what we're seeing happen as we see risk induced by all this change, especially around federal cyber, for example, what are, what do you see that organizations should be thinking about? And we've talked about identity protection. What do you see in the, happening in the threat landscape more generally? Obviously, not obviously, but many of us are familiar with what has been going on with the group Salt Typhoon and the penetration of U.S. infrastructure. What other, and really when I talk about threats to an organization, that, and I'm sure you do the same, it's sort of two general groups. One is cybercrime, ransomware, you know, data extraction for ransom. And then there's nation state for espionage and potential control, command and control. What should people be thinking about as they see this big picture of what's going on? What can they take away and say, all right, what should I be doing? How should I be grabbing and getting ready for what may be coming in the next few years?
There's a lot in you. You just touched on a whole bunch of different things. Let me just share a few sort of thoughts that I hope line up with a few of the points that you're making there. But fundamental question is, what should people be doing? When I say change is bad, what I mean is that when infrastructure is shifting, there's changes in people, changes in personnel, good or bad, it introduces risk. Now, when I say we can potentially make things better by learning about Active Directory, partnering, that's also change, but that's a different kind of thing. That's something where you're actively trying to reduce risk. You go in and you clean up the permissions that you've got around your enterprise. And you actually disable and clean them up and put systems in place that do a better job managing them. Is that change? Yeah, it is. But that's the kind of change you want. So I think as people are listening, I'm sure there's a lot of people going, what's Ed talking about? Change is bad. You know, how do you innovate if you don't do that? You do need to innovate. Now, the problem we have in federal government right now is that my suspicion is that a lot of modernization and a lot innovation and technology refresh and update will probably be put on the back burner to just keep the plane flying, so to speak. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's natural for anybody, any observer, regardless of what your opinion is about these big changes being made. I think any reasonable observer is going to say, hard to imagine a really deep transformation going on right now. Because right now you got so much going on that I think most people are just thinking, how do I keep the roof on the building? You know what I mean? You're not thinking about, you know, remodeling the basement when you got to keep the roof on the building. So
right.
We'll go through a period right now where I think that stabilizing what's still in place will be a key objective. Now, maybe at that point we can get back to thinking about innovation. I mean, if you watch these TV shows, I don't, but I podcasters and others talking about politics who don't understand tech the way you and I do, they'll say, oh, there's like these systems are running this thing called COBOL, you know, which hasn't been, you know, they still, it's so old, they don't teach it. I mean, that's overplaying it. There's such a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage of stuff that's still running COBOL that's just a silly anecdote. But I do think it points to an issue that getting to modernization requires that you have the best people there, that they're incented, they're engaged, they're ready to roll, they want to do it. And government tends to attract people who are mission focused. I think a lot of that's going to be very much slowed down. So I hope what happens is we have a period of stability where we don't make too many additional changes to things. Better just keep it stable. Do what you got to do on the security side, but no, not the time to be rolling out a new user interface. You know, better to wait. And then once we've convinced ourselves that we've got some measure of stability, then we can hopefully get back to some semblance of normal. I'm a very optimistic person. So I hope that can happen. But the nightmare scenario here, again, we're security people, so we have no choice but to consider the worst case scenarios, are that amidst this change, some very permanent implants are being put in place by our adversary. Permanent in the sense that these could be changes to our software. They could be malware embedded in a way that dissolves where you can't see it. I worked at Bell Labs in right before I started in 1983. Ken Thompson gave his Turing Award lecture when he won the Turing Award. And in it, he showed how you can drop a Trojan into software and make it dissolve so you'll never find it. So I still make grad students read that all these years, 40 years later, we still read that paper. But it illustrates the fact that a capable adversary, nation state, can drop things into your software and you're not going to find it. Maybe if you're GCHQ, maybe if you're NSA and you really can just literally pull the electrons apart, you might have a shot. But for all of us mere mortals, no way isn't going to happen. And that is the thing I'm the most concerned with right now, that there would be these permanent implantations into our network. You know, the proverbial kill switch that people reference. A lot of people talking about that in our airplanes. Hey, do we have kill switches? I'm more worried, you know, are people putting kill switches now into our the applications that take care of our elderly or do our health or do our social security or do our benefits? If these things are something that somebody from another country can push a button and make things break, I fear, Sean, that as you and I are talking right now, that this could be going on as we speak. Probably wouldn't know it because of all the change, I hate to use the word chaos, but it does seem like a little bit of that.
It is. I mean, it's there's a universe of underfunded municipal water utilities with old software on there that if their nation state chose to infiltrate as you say, it'd be difficult unless you're the NSA to find it. These people are not the NSA. So
tough problem.
Yeah, for sure. So from an organizational point of view, and when we see the CISA in particular has made great strides in the last few years in collaborating with business and providing guidance to business and all that. What do you think? I mean, we're still in chaos for what's going on with organizations like CISA. Do you think that will settle out to be, and I realize this is speculation, do you think we're going to be able to rely on what we get from them in the same way that we did in the past, or is it going to devolve onto individual organizations? Because certainly the states are not equipped for it in the same way. Is it going to be on our own recognizance now?
I think so. Yeah, I think that it's going to privatize. I mean, the good news is there are a lot of excellent companies that build cybersecurity learning resources and support resources. So, you know, you could, if you have a hack, your small business, you know, you could, contact CISA, or there's any number of vendors that provide incident response. You know, I get to list off a bunch of them. So there, it's not like you have no help, but these are commercial services that you pay money for, right? I mean, I can call CISA and they'll give me some assistance, or I can call Arctic Wolf and they'll give me assistance, but they're also going to their business. So that's kind of thing that's a little bit different, that it's going to privatize a lot of this. And if you are a well-funded organization, you have a problem, you have no challenge getting good support. But if you're a little nonprofit with no money and you run soup kitchens or something, all of a sudden you're going to bring ransomware, you're going to have to go and find somebody who'll give you help in kind, because I don't think there's going to be the same level of support from DHS in those areas. And again, there's a lot of people listening who would say, hey, Ed, that's by design. And I make no value judgment about that. It's just a fact that that'll be less.
This is about facts.
Less dependable resource. It is what it is. But the good news, like I said, is that there are a lot of companies that do this. And maybe some of them will even slide into a more egalitarian thing. Like at TAG, we charge different amounts for our services. If you're a large bank, we charge you X. If you're a little tiny, you know, group that really needs assistance, then we charge you a tiny fraction of X. We try to democratize what we do.
Right.
And I right. think if you see enough of that, then perhaps it won't be that big a deal. But we don't know. I'm just speculating that the private industry and vendors and commercial entities will probably step in where maybe CIS has less budget or people to do what it's been doing.
Right. Well, so to sum up then, what piece of advice would you give our listeners for the you know, this is the, I know we've been reciting that Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times. What piece of advice would you give?
Simplify. Like if you're running something, network or small business, you're the IT administrator, or you do security, or you do Active Directory, you're part of some Active Directory team, and you're wondering what should be the most urgent thing, do a self-inventory of your own understanding and insight into how things work. And if you really do feel like the complexity is too high, your understanding of your resources and assets is very weak and inaccurate, if you ask three people on your team how, you know, this widget or that widget works, none of them would know. That's what needs to be attended to. That's the most important thing. Reducing complexity, increasing your understanding. And then you're in a good position to roll out a tool like Sempris. Like, you don't want to roll out Sempris if you had no idea what in the dickens you're running. You know, that's not a great customer for any vendor. You know, it's a total mess. The example I use a lot of times is if I walk into a kitchen and a hoarder lives there, you know, like those TV shows where people hoard and they throw cans and all this crap. I just garbage everywhere. And somebody says, I wonder if there's any mice in here. Well, you could go buy a mice detection and response system, an MDR, and they'll put sensors in all the garbage looking for mice. Or you can just clean the kitchen. So let me keep that in mind. You clean the kitchen. Then you put the sensor in and it really works. Like a motion sensor works great in a clean kitchen. Motion sensors with all garbage all over the place is not going to catch the mice. It's going to be a mess. So that would be my advice. Clean things up, pick good vendors, and let's all make sure that we keep our heads on straight here. I mean, change has happened before, but this is there's a lot of really very different types of things happening in the U.S. federal government. So if ever there was a time for us to be on our game, those of us who are doing IT security, now's the time.
Well, thank you, Ed. Always appreciate your insights and your wide range of experiences to help shed light on these issues. So thanks again for attending, and everybody, thanks for sitting in on this session.